Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, much of the attention right now in official Washington as we record this on Wednesday morning is Ted Cruz, senator from Texas, launched into not an official filibuster, but basically the same effect, although it won't actually delay a vote. But he's been talking nonstop, with the exception of getting a few questions from some friends and even a couple of non-allies on the issue of trying to defund Obamacare. Right now, he's over 19 hours and counting. So, Rand Paul, you got to do better next time, buddy, because he stopped just short of 13 hours when it came to the drone issue that he was filibustering on a few months ago. Ted Cruz, of course, for him, the big issue was the scourge of Obamacare and the need to defund it now.
The American people want to stop this madness. And so do I. Americans understand this thing isn't working, and yet Washington is pretending not to know.
So, Jim, obviously, you know, some people love what Ted Cruz is doing. Others, the Democrats, hate what he's even trying to do. A lot of Republicans don't agree with the strategy. But the good news here is that he's not only calling attention to a host of deficiencies with Obamacare, but he's doing so in an incredibly articulate manner on virtually no sleep.
I was about to say that, you know, Ted Cruz is not just talking the talk, he's walking the walk. But he is technically just talking the talk and not actually walking the walk because he's not allowed to move around. But having said that, I think, you know, having had quite a few doubts about this strategy, you have to salute the man for sticking by what he thinks and his principles and being willing to go through this physical test of endurance and bladder control to speak at such great lengths and to basically make the case. And here's where, at least, I guess you'd say the outlines of how this works or how this serves the cause of the right is a little bit clearer. Because, you know, from the very beginning, you and I have been discussing this, and I was saying, well, how do you get the Senate to pass a budget that defunds Obamacare? That's a very big hurdle, very tough to get. And then you got to get Obama to sign it into law. And I argue that, look, Obama would rather see the country burst into flame from sea to shining sea than to sign the legislation that would defund Obamacare. Well, basically what appears maybe the strategy from the very beginning has been, knowing that it was going to be pretty much impossible to defund Obamacare without control of the Senate, without the White House, was basically to position the Republican Party as adamantly and strongly and passionately opposed to Obamacare as humanly possible right before it goes into place. And that's not a bad place for Republicans to be. And to have won, to have fought the good fight and lose might be good if in the coming months people see that Obamacare is a disaster. And on, you know, earlier this week on Campaign Spot, with all these kind of wacky little train wreck gifts, I pointed out the software is not ready to go. It's destroying the full-time job market and making employers shift everyone to part-time. It is not covering a whole bunch of kids because of the way that it's worded. If you're a union member and you already have a pretty good health insurance plan, you're going to end up paying a whole lot more for it. There are going to be a lot of very big problems with this. And if you watched Obama bore the entire world, including Bill Clinton, to tears discussing Obamacare yesterday, the White House is just putting blinders on and saying, everything's fine, everything's fine, it's going to be great, you're going to love it. This is actually, you know, a useful tool for 2014 and 2016. The only question now is if, you know, if this does not succeed, and as, you know, everybody expects, the Senate invokes cloture on this and cuts off debate, it passes, but it doesn't pass, or, you know, it doesn't get the required number of votes. Is the base disappointed by this? And I think through this, Cruz is getting everybody not disappointed by this and basically kind of getting everybody to say, look, right now, you know, Obamacare is a giant bet. And we are telling the public this is going to be a disaster. And now in the coming months, it's already unpopular. But once America starts living under it, they'll remember which party pushed it through and which party fought it tooth and nail. That's not a bad outcome considering the tough odds that were stacked against the Republicans and Obamacare opponents from the beginning of this.
Kudos to Cruz and kudos to those who assisted him along the way, even though he had to stand there the whole time. Just getting a break from talking for a few minutes is definitely a huge help. And I'd love to see him, even though it's not a real filibuster, I'd love to see him break the record if that's possible. I'm not sure exactly when the vote is scheduled for, but a very game effort from Senator Cruz. On to the potentially bad martini now. And obviously the defunding debate has taken up the entirety of the oxygen in this continuing resolution fight over the last week or two, and really even going back into the summer recess and so forth. And one of the things that does is it pushes other potential options for conservatives off the table. And one of those, and we've talked about it before, being pushed by David Vitter and Mike Enzi in particular, and that's to force the Senate to vote and hopefully agree to removing the exemptions the Obama administration placed on Congress, their staffs, themselves, of course. And so right now, Congress and staffers are playing under different rules under Obamacare, and Vitter and Enzi have been trying to say, hey, if this is so great, then everybody should be under this. And the problem has been on both sides of the aisle. Republicans and Democrats want to protect themselves and their staffers. But David Ferdosa over at conservativeintel.com says, this is an issue that you would get a vast majority of the public behind, a public which might be getting lost in some of the arcane procedural rules of the current defunding debate. It's pretty easy to get people fired up about Congress giving themselves special treatment, especially on a law that a lot of people hate.
And I think Ferdosa's right here. And it's one of those things where you look at that and think, well, gee, why didn't they make that more of a point? One of the things that actually has helped Obamacare from the beginning is that it's got so many different parts of it that are bad, so that you actually can't concentrate your firepower on one aspect of it. I just talked about its bad influence on the job market. I talked about how the software is not ready. I didn't even mention their privacy concerns about all the data you're going to be turning into. You could argue about the amount of public money that is being used to encourage people to sign up, which is basically a PR campaign on behalf of the legislation, that there's so many things wrong with it that everyone can find something that bothers them about it. The problem is that it can turn into kind of this cacophonous noise of it's bad. And here's a bazillion reasons why. And obviously, the low information voters tune it all out. It'll be very interesting once people really start living under. We're already hearing people talking about having their plans canceled. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And it turns out to not be true. Premiums are going up, and Obama promised they'd go down like $3,000 for everybody. All these different aspects of it, it's tough to focus in on one. That might have resonated more. But it's not like that this point expires. You know, it's not like you can't go back and make this argument in the coming weeks and months. We will see how this shakes out. That may end up being the single most repugnant part of it. I would rather point out, however, that it's not once, like they can just, you know, put themselves under it and keep the plan going. You know, I have my doubts of whether this, you know, whether it makes that much sense to focus on only one aspect of it. So if they tweak that one aspect, they end up, you know, being able to preserve the rest of the bill. And the whole point is to scrap it, start over, and find some better solution. So
last point on the filibuster, great move by Ted Cruz last night with the bedtime story. That was classic and well done on his part. The green eggs and ham now in the congressional record for him reading that to his daughters via television right around their bedtime last night. I'm not sure what book you would choose, Jim, but green eggs and ham, definitely a classic there.
It's up there, yeah. Now, the irony is that this morning on Morning Joe, I think it was Claire McCaskill, was saying, well, the whole point of green eggs and ham is that you don't know if you like something until you try it.
Oh, jeez.
So thus, we should all try Obamacare and see if we like it. You know, I haven't tried sarin either, Senator McCaskill. I haven't tried sticking a thumbtack, you know, through my finger. Well, actually, I did do that. But, you know, like there are all kinds of stuff in life that I haven't tried a heart attack, you know, and I'm pretty sure those are bad. So you can take that to its extent. If you have all this evidence that this is a lousy piece of legislation, it's going to louse up 1/6 of the economy and louse up the, like, you know, what? How much more do we have to try? This is basically another variation of the, we have to pass the bill in order so you can see what's in it. Apparently it was the Ark of the Covenant, because if it gets any worse, people's faces will be melting and exploding from this legislative monstrosity. So anyway, on that point, I'll cease ranting about Obamacare.
All right, on to martini number three now. And recently, Jim and I were lamenting on the fact that Terry McAuliffe seemed to be building a bigger lead against Ken Cuccinelli in the Virginia governor's race. Cuccinelli, for those of you who don't already know, is a pretty rock-solid conservative, and he's been vastly outfunded. McAuliffe has spent his entire chest on attacking Cuccinelli rather than saying a single thing that he would actually do if elected governor, been really going after him on women's issues. Cuccinelli's also got a Libertarian in the race. He's drawn about 10% right now, so he's got a whole host of challenges. But McAuliffe might have actually opened the door, especially in a state like Virginia. This from Breitbart.com. Virginia gubernatorial candidate Terry McAuliffe's website was updated Monday to show his commitment to bring Colorado-like gun control to the Commonwealth. In the section titled Investing in Virginia's Urban Centers, it now contains the heading Support Common Sense Gun Control Measures. Under that heading, it says McAuliffe will support mainstream and majority-supported gun control measures like universal background checks, limiting the size of magazines, and a return to the one gun per month rule. So, Jim, Virginia's obviously changed a bit in the last half generation or so in terms of the political leanings, but there are certain parts of the states where if Cuccinelli can get this out there, it could make a big difference.
It could. Some of the folks I've talked to have wondered whether Cuccinelli is actually he grew up in Fairfax and his roots are in Northern Virginia. And a couple of the Republicans I've spoken to have wondered whether Cuccinelli is not running quite as well as he could in Southern Virginia because he's just not seen as a local guy, you know, as a good old boy, as a guy who culturally gets it down there, even though I think he's pretty, you know, about as rock solid a conservative as you're going to find running statewide in the state of Virginia. I guess I don't know whether it's accent, I don't know whether it's persona, I don't know whether it's, you know, the way he talks about things. For whatever reason, he isn't necessarily winning out the rural blue-collar vote that you might expect. So obviously this may help with him. But let me just observe on Terry McAuliffe, it may very well be that when he said, you know, yeah, I'd love to see the laws passed that were passed in Colorado that just cost two state lawmakers their jobs, he may have just not been paying attention to what he was saying, Greg.
Shocker.
Because there's a pattern of that. And, you know, it was this Sunday. Richmond Times-Dispatch basically says that he's a deeply unserious candidate. They asked him what positions are in the governor's cabinet. He said he couldn't answer that question then. He botched this interview with the Northern Virginia Technology Council because they wanted to ask him some serious questions. He's like, I'll worry about that when I get there. He made, you know, on abortion, he said he was going to have guidance opinions that would undo some of the laws passed by the state legislature. And basically, Virginia state law experts are kind of looking at it and saying, what are you talking about? The governor doesn't have that kind of authority. In a whole bunch of these very basic questions, it really comes across as if Terry McAuliffe is just kind of winging it. And he hasn't done his homework. Yeah, he's not that familiar with the issues. And it's not that surprising when you look at his career. He's been a political fundraiser all of his time. He's been a schmoozer. His job is to get together with rich people and persuade them to give money to the candidates he likes. And he's very good at that. But that doesn't turn you into a policy expert. He kind of thinks, gun control, good. It's a good thing. Everybody I speak to in McLean likes it. And, the rest of the state is not McLean. And so it's not that surprising that McAuliffe is saying this. It is kind of interesting that he wouldn't have the self-awareness to recognize that, you know, that Mark Warner, you know, ran and courted the NRA's endorsement. Tim Kaine did the exact same thing 4 years later. Creed Deeds, I think, was pretty clear. But he didn't want to touch the gun issue with a 10-foot pole. Democrats in Virginia traditionally have stayed very, very far away from the gun issue, even after the Virginia Tech shooting. So the idea that this is going to be, you know, a key component of the McAuliffe agenda is kind of baffling. And I think, you know, very much qualifies for our crazy martini.
Yeah, he's kind of crazy. And the fact that he's ahead is pretty crazy, too. So, Jim, have a great day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.